Newsweek presents The Debate with Andrew Tolman.
Everything 100% of the time, 24 hours a day, is a negotiation.
Ellis Hennigan.
None of us have fallen for the notion that this is conservative.
Amani Wells Onyoha.
I'm completely fed up with whether it's politicized or not.
And Jeff Charles.
That distracts us from actually rolling up our sleeves.
The Debate starts now.
And two of the great artists of our time representing the groundbreaking legacy of hip-hop in America, LLJ Cool J. By the way, that boy's got, that man's got biceps bigger than my thighs. I think he's been.
Woo boy. So that elicited a lot of backlash. And I will say it came from both sides this time. Obviously more so from the right. But I mean, there are people on the left who were criticizing him for that comment, right? Referring to LL Cool J as boy. And my thing is, like, everybody knows, well, at least most people know, that the term boy has been used historically to demean and belittle black men. But when I saw this, you know, it's interesting because obviously Democrats are still, black Democrats are still going to vote for Biden. And I do know that it might be different if somebody like Trump had said that. The media would have gone crazy with it. But I want to look at a deeper issue here. And this is Biden support among black Americans, which is really going down. And it's not like he can keep getting away with saying these things. We know that during the 2020 campaign, he said that if you don't know if you want to vote for him or Trump, then you ain't black. He makes these statements all the time. But a recent poll, there was a Highland Project poll that showed that 69% of millennial and Gen Z black women are dissatisfied with the direction that the country is heading under Biden. There was an American Enterprise Institute survey that showed that only 21% of black voters between the ages of 18 and 49 want Biden to be the Democratic nominee. And there are plenty of other polls showing that Biden is losing black support. And I don't think it's really because he makes these comments or he makes these gaffes, but I think it's more because there's a growing sense in the black community that Democrats are not giving them a return on their investment. Black people vote for Democrats at a 90% rate and they get very little in return. However, on the other side, you have the Republican Party who really doesn't want black voters. I mean, they don't reach out. They don't really try to court black voters. You've got Republican influencers telling the base that, oh, yeah, we're going to have this massive influx of black people into our party because Biden's losing support. It's the same tune that we heard in 2016. And then it doesn't happen. But here's the thing. It gets me to ask this question. Are black people getting to the point where we are politically homeless? You got one party that does nothing for our votes. We got the other party that doesn't want to compete. Where are we going here? I think black people are going to be staying home in larger numbers than normal. Yes. But that's a question. Is the black community becoming more politically homeless?
I think apathy is going to become the default, because I can relate to that as one of them 69% millennial black women. I can definitely say it's like Biden isn't, he's not speaking for me. You know, he's not going to the podium advocating for my needs. And just thinking about as a woman in his administration, the first thing that he said he was going to do was going to be to pass the Voting Rights Bill or the Voting Rights Act. That was dead on arrival. He hasn't said anything about that since the campaign trail for 2020. So as a black voter, that was something that he used to incentivize and motivate black people to come out and vote last cycle. And he just completely abandoned that campaign promise. And then to see what happened to Roe as a woman happen under his presidency, even though he didn't do it, but we didn't see much outbursts or backlash or just any passion. In my opinion, I didn't see enough passion from this administration when it came to dealing with that issue when Roe was overturned. So I think that puts black women particularly in a very weird position, because it's like, I mean, I guess we're going to vote for him because we don't want to vote for Trump. But it's very much so a begrudging vote. Like, it is a very nonchalant, unenthusiastic vote. And I do start to feel like, you know, we're just doing this to do it at this point because we can't vote for the other guy. And I know that Democrats are just very comfortable in there. They're very comfortable with the black vote. They know it's a vote that they can guarantee basically with 90% turnout every election. And they know they don't have to do much to work for it. So I would never advocate for going to the Republican Party. Love y'all, Republicans. Bless y'all, Republicans. But
come on over the
no, Andrew, I love you so much, but no.
No.
But it just kind of leaves us like, what do we do? Do we continue to be kind of just taken advantage of and taken for granted? Or what do we do? How do we really flex our political power in this instance? I'm not entirely sure how to go about it. and other than not vote.
let me throw this out there, and I want to get you guys' reaction to this, especially Imani. That I've had conversations with Black Democrats who actually wish that the Republican Party were doing more to win Black votes, and even to see more Black people go over to the Republican Party, because if both parties actually have to compete, then they'll actually do something. Right now, the Democrats know that they can do whatever they want. Joe Biden can get on a stage with a banjo and use all kinds of racial epithets, and Black people will still vote for him. So to me, because the other party doesn't want the votes, they don't want to compete. But if they did, that would put Black people in a position to where they could possibly influence the party's either party. Now, what do you think? Because I've always heard that argument. I want to see what you guys think about that.
Yeah, I'm personally a little stuck on the picture of Joe Biden playing the banjo on stage. So I'm having trouble focusing on the core question. But I want to ask a different question about this latest gaffe. And look, Joe Biden, for his entire public career, has been a gaffe machine. You can't even question it. It's all the time, over and over again. The gaffes are worse lately because of apparent cognitive issues. That's not a surprise. You listen to him now, you listen to him 10 years ago, there's a difference. It's very obvious. But for me, and this is obviously speaking as a white guy, I found the LLJ Cool J part far more troubling than the, calling him boy, because he self-corrected, right? He immediately corrected the man or whatever. And that to me is just such an not even thinking about it way of speech, but the fact that he doesn't and can't and won't either read the teleprompter properly or know who such a cultural icon is that he can refer to him by name accurately. I mean, he apparently feels comfortable talking about his bicep size, but he doesn't know the guy's name. I mean, this is not some obscure character. This is, a major figure in American culture. And that to me is the issue, the repeated demonstration of sort of cognitive slash knowledge problems. So that's what, when I look at it, that was the troubling thing to me. But I'm curious, does the butchering of LL Cool J's name alienate Black hip hop lovers, or is it really just the boy slip? Is that really the big issue?
I think it's both. I think it just goes to show that they're not putting the care and the effort into trying to talk to the community. Like, why is it every time we try to talk to the community, we talking about hip hop? Is that all we are? It's just hip hop. Like, right. It's like they don't do a good job at really trying to embed themselves in the culture. Like, just like when Hillary Clinton was running in 2016, she was like, I got hot sauce in my bag. And it was like, oh, girl.
Picture of that Kamala Harris put out where she's holding this big thing of greens and she's just smiling at the refrigerator?
Stop that.
That was amazing.
Can I throw some cold water?
That's her authentic California self just coming out. That's all that.
No, it's not. And it's like, we can tell. I think that's what it is. They are insulting us. Okay. That's really what it is. You're starting to be insulting. And it's like, just pass the dang voting rights bill. Like, we're asking for bare minimum stuff. But you want to, you can't even say LL Cool J name right. It's like, their priorities be all out of whack. And my thing is this, all Democrats have to do in their administrations is one teeny, teeny token of a thing for Black people every 4 years. It ain't even got to be nothing crazy, just something that they can point to be like, we did that for y'all. We got y'all, come out. Let's do it again. They don't ever have anything to point to because they don't deliver anything. And that's my problem with them. And that's what leads us to the thing that you're talking about, Jeff. We go by election cycle after election cycle after election cycle with all these empty promises and they have nothing to show for it. And they're like, well, if you don't vote for us, you're going to vote for the racist. And it's like, there's overt and there's covert, and you're getting covert by not delivering. So let's just call it what it is. You can only differentiate yourself from the other party for so long before it's starting to get real blurry and muddy to me, and people really can't tell anymore. And that's the position that the Democrats find themselves in right now.
Well, I hear what all of you all are saying, but I'm going to be the voice of skepticism on some of this today, I think.
What? You? Stop it, Alice.
You all make good points. It's always a mistake for people who are old talking about music that's too young for them. I remember when my parents used to talk about the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. They never quite got it right.
I think LL might be in your vicinity age-wise, by the way.
Oh, well, yeah, but I'm not the one who screwed up his name. I could have gotten his name right. And we were celebrating, Amani, the 50th anniversary of hip hop, which is kind of worth celebrating. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's a cultural moment. And that is the, you know, probably the most potent musical genre of today, cutting across the country. But you're right. I mean, when old people talk about kids' music, even 50-year-old kids' music, they always sound a little goofy. Now, let me focus on the political parts of this, though. First of all, Black voters, particularly Black female voters, are the base of the Democratic Party today. Yes. Right. Yes. I mean, they're the most reliable voters. They're active. They're, compared to most folks, pretty engaged, and just as much as white evangelicals are the core, really, of the Republican Party. I mean, that's the way the politics align today. And it's true. I mean, there's a lot of, on all sides, everybody's unhappy. We're a grumpy nation, right? And Biden's numbers are in the toilet and Donald Trump's numbers are in the toilet. I mean, we hate all politicians today. So I don't know that you can read so much into that. I mean, that's a broader cultural question about why we don't like our political leaders anymore. Why we're so frustrated in all directions. One of you all cited those wrong direction numbers. I mean, they're abysmal. But they're abysmal for everybody. There was a time, and I guess it's after the, one of you all will remember this date, after the 2012 election, I guess, the Republican Party all got together and said, we did this big autopsy, and what we've got to do is become broader, right? We've got to have a moderate immigration plan, and we've got to welcome Latino voters and give African-American voters a feeling they have a home. And everybody rallied around that. It all sounded very sensible and logical. And then Donald Trump came down and ran it over with his golf cart.
You had, right? Jeb Bush campaigning in Spanish, right? I mean, well, yeah.
Next thing we heard,
there was a
Muslim
try.
Campaign.
It didn't work.
Yeah, but that was never really serious in the first place.
I think it is the right answer for Republicans, but I don't think they want to make it. And
no, they don't. Yeah, that whole autopsy thing was never serious in the first place. I mean, Paul Ryan urged Mitt Romney to court Black voters. He had a whole plan laid out. I mean, Paul Ryan was a disciple of Jack Kemp, a Republican who actually wanted Black voters. And yeah. Romney's team tore the whole thing up. The Republican Party, I should say, has always done this. They always try to make it sound like they want Black voters. Really, they're putting on an illusion for their white base to make them think that, oh, yeah, we're actually trying to get more people in this party. So don't leave us because we're not racist. But at the same time, they don't actually put forth the effort. I mean, you have some individuals who do, but by and large, the Republican apparatus does not.
Yeah. Well, in defense of the indifferent GOP outreach to Black voters, the perception among a lot of members of the Republican Party is, what is the point of trying? It's an impossible get. It's banging your head against a wall. It doesn't matter what we say, what we do, what we offer. You know, even if the benefits of GOP-led areas are demonstrably superior to Democrat-led areas for Black inhabitants, it doesn't penetrate because it's a guaranteed vote for the Democrats in those areas. And so, you know, we could do outreach as a noble, useless cause politically, but what's the point of doing it?
Yeah. And that's the thing. That's the excuse that I've always heard Republicans give. I always bring up Governor Mike Huckabee in Arkansas. When he ran for governor, he got 49% of the Black vote. How? I asked him, how'd you do it? He's like, well, I asked for it. I actually put in the work. I went into Black communities. I spoke at Black churches. So Republicans, if they really wanted it, they could get more of the Black vote. Now, it would take a long time. This wouldn't be like an overnight type of thing. You have to put in the work for an extended period of time because the GOP has essentially ignored the Black community since the Goldwater years. So you have to win that trust back. The problem is they just don't want to do it. If you were to ask the average Republican voter, the average conservative, would you like to see more Black and Hispanics in the party? They would say yes. Of course, they would love that.
Everybody.
But when you look at the leadership and the GOP party, they don't.
And it's a leadership problem, just like we have a leadership problem in this country, period. Just like the DNC, the RNC or the GOP, excuse me, has leadership problems. The people who are making these decisions aren't even thinking about the people whom the party is made up of. Because like you're saying, if you were to poll the average Republican, if the polls are saying that they want Blacks and Latinos and other people to be a part of the gang, then that's what the leadership should do. But they have an agenda. They've had an agenda since the Southern Strategy, and it's been a winning agenda for a very long time. And it's going to be very hard to convince them to do otherwise, because frankly, they don't need the votes to win. they can get the black votes just, you know, because they could try and get them, but they don't need them. And we're trying to get people, well, not me, but if we were trying to do this, we're trying to get some people to do something that they don't necessarily need to, but they would have to want to do it.
So here's a question. And I say this, I mean, I'm having this conversation, but I say this as somebody who hates both major parties, the Democrats and the Republicans. Even the Republicans got more of the black vote, they wouldn't do anything with it. So what do black people do to get more political capital? I mean, what are we supposed to do? I mean, Democrats will never deliver because they don't have to. So yeah. To me, like, what do we do?
I don't know. I feel, and this is a perfect segue into our next topic, but I feel like they're going to have to lose really, really, really bad. They're just going to have to simply lose really bad to change, because they are stuck in this very overconfident, cocky state of mind that at this point is delusional. And I don't know why they're still behaving this way as if everything is sweet, because it's really not. And if they want the
challenge, right. The challenge isn't, at least at the moment, Jeff, I think, isn't whether black voters will vote Republican, because there's very little evidence that in large numbers that's going to happen. And Republicans aren't doing anything, as you say, probably to deserve it. The question is whether they turn out at all.
Correct.
The difference between races where there's high black turnout, Democrats are doing great. I mean, and Biden and Harris were able to get very, very high turnouts in those areas last summer. Will they be able to do that again? And Amani, you make a good point. There's some things I think Dems have to point to, and there's certainly some things they can point to and say, look how wretched those other guys are. But there is a need to rev up some enthusiasm there, and that's really what this campaign is about, I think.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
So in the latest poll that came out, I believe it was in the Washington Post, and a lot of people are going to say this is an outlier post, and it very well may be. But the poll shows that Joe Biden is down in the polls, in this particular poll, 42% to Trump having 51% up. And when you get into the meat of the poll, it's just not looking great. The same numbers that we've been seeing, and he's trending down. You're seeing a lot of people in the poll say they would just rather somebody else run. But then there's a lot of people in the poll giving conflicting opinions where they're like, who else can it be? So we're just really in a part in the Democratic Party, just like you're saying, Jeff, where people are kind of just, their hands are tied. People don't even know what to do anymore, but they are not pleased with the direction of where the party is going. They do not believe they have adequate leadership. And it's starting to look like the Democrats are walking into this election and it's going to be a slaughter. They're walking in with their eyes wide open and they're going to get murked. Now, although he may not lose by 10%, he is trending down. And he barely won last time. I believe it was 4.5%. So if you are trending behind in the polls, getting this close to the election, it's not looking good, babes. So my question is this. What is a Trump presidency going to look like for the next 4 years? Are people scared enough for that? Is that fear of what that could be strong enough to get people to vote? Or is it going to be what I think? People just aren't going to vote and they're going to end up losing because they didn't do what they were supposed to do the last 4 years to secure a second term.
So are you predicting that Democrats are going to lose in 2024, basically?
I'm going to put my money on it today. Y'all quote me today. I said this September 27th, 2023. They are going to lose, and it's not going to be by 1 point. I think they're going to lose by at least 2-3 points, at least. It's going to be close, but it's not going to be super close. I'm feeling it's going to get very much so 2016, where everybody's just saying, oh, it's all good. Hillary's the only competent one. How could we ever vote for Trump? He's crazy. Why would we do that? And they're still going to lose. And that's my prediction. I'm saying that right now.
Both Electoral College and popular vote, you think?
Electoral College for sure. Okay. For sure. Popular vote, not entirely sure. I think he could mess around and lose the popular vote, not because Trump is going to get more votes. Technically, he'll get more votes, but I think there's going to be a lot of people who typically come out and vote in this election who are not going to be motivated enough to do it. They're either going to not vote as a protest vote because they're not getting what they felt like they were supposed to get over the last 4 years, or they're just completely apathetic towards this process at this point, and they don't feel motivated enough to even participate. So I think that's why he's going to lose. Not necessarily because people are going to vote against Biden, but I don't think he has the chutzpah to motivate people to come out and vote for him. That's why I think he's going to lose.
I think that he has a serious enthusiasm problem, a voter enthusiasm. Biden does. I saw a poll last week saying that like 51% of those who support him would be voting for him because they don't want Trump to be president, and 49% saying that they vote for him because they support him. On Trump's side, the number of people who actually support Trump was like at 69%. Mm-hmm. The ones who were just voting against Biden were at like 30, 40%. So, I mean, there is last time around too.
I mean, you know, you had huge crowds for Trump and Biden in his basement on Zoom doing nothing. And, you know, the 18 people show up at a rally, still won. You know, the enthusiasm gap doesn't necessarily mean that the votes aren't there. Right.
Biden was higher in 2020, though.
Imani, I'm going to take your bet. OK.
OK, take my bet. I'll put $50 on it.
And let me, you make a good case. I think the part that I agree with what you're talking about is the enthusiasm. There is an enthusiasm problem out there. But it's also true that Democrats, because I don't know, something in the DNA, but Democrats always in the run-up to an election get in this little hysterical period. They go, oh my God, everything's going to hell. We're never going to win. I mean, there is a lot of that in the kind of the psyche of Democrats, but boy, I think Dems are still playing from a pretty strong point of strength on this one.
First of all, Biden is a strong word.
I know. I mean, he's got a bunch of stuff done. I mean, he's passed a bunch of bipartisan legislation that nobody said that he would. He's revived NATO. He's gotten America to stand up against the Russians in a way that I think has been a positive. Anyway, I can list all the guy's accomplishments, and I have some bones to pick with him too. But I don't see anything that Donald Trump, who I believe will be the Republican nominee, done since that race in 2020 that would make anybody else vote for him. I mean, he's driven people away, you know, January 6th and claiming he won the election and 4 indictments. And is that going to make suburban voters, people in the middle, swing voters, move from Biden to Trump? Because that's got to happen in billions. I just don't see it.
I don't think they're going to move.
If you've got like a 1 to 10 scale, you know, 10 is a 100 just sold out for Trump and 1 is like sold out for Biden. OK, so 5s are the undecideds. Right.
Right.
That's who the race is about. The Trump supporters are all 9s and 10s.
Yeah. Right.
And the Biden supporters are all like, you know, 4.8. OK, you know, they're like barely, but there are more of them. And, you know, the 9s and 10s are loud and boisterous and active and want you to believe they represent everybody. And I'm kind of with Ellis. I think that it's, you know, the Trump supporters are looking at this poll and just loving it. Mm-hmm. And I look at this poll and think that seems a little bit outliery to me. Yeah. And I know what turned out last time was, you know, huge rallies, no rallies. And yet the numbers, because people still, when push came to shove to pick, they weren't excited about voting for Biden, but they voted for Biden. I mean, even look at the one that's the most surprising on here, I thought, was the, you know, Democratic Party nomination preference, right? Like 33% want Biden, 62% want somebody else.
And that's what I mean. And the thing is, y'all, when we go back, let's think about 2020 when he was running. First of all, he ran as a one-term president. They were teeing up Kamala to be the candidate the second time. He never was supposed to be here for 2 terms anyway. And at the time, people were still holding on to their Obama glory days. They didn't know what a Biden presidency was. So what helped him with the initial turnout, I think, was a lot of that nostalgia and people looking up at their Obama pictures and thinking about the glory days. And I think that's what got people to vote for him. the first time and defeat Trump the first time. Now he's just another establishment candidate who didn't do a great job. When we're thinking about everyday Americans, like, think about how Biden can market himself. He's passed all of these bills that nobody knows about. If you was to tap a random American on the street and be like, what has Biden done for you? They're going to say nothing. It's expensive. My rent just went up $600. My food costs $1 trillion. Gas is high as I don't know what. My wages are stagnant. There's nothing that everyday voters can look at and be like, thank you, Biden, except for maybe some of the people who are affected by some of the student loan debt forgiveness stuff. But that's going to be the stuff that helps an incumbent president win a second term. And he doesn't have that type of support. His favorability is low. People are not happy with the job that he's doing. And he's an incumbent president going into that. So then people are going to have the reverse nostalgia. Oh, I remember Trump gave us them checks. Gas was real low during the pandemic. You know, when I think about it, my rent was lower too. People are going to start kind of romanticizing what it was like. Exactly. They're going to start romanticizing what it was like to be under Trump. I'm already seeing the tweets and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But people are saying it wasn't even that bad for real. So, and you're going to have the reverse thing and they're going to vote for Trump. That's what I think is going to happen. Biden hasn't done himself a good job. One, he hasn't marketed things that he's accomplished well, because most people don't even know he's done those things. And then two, he is already unpopular. His own party, 62% of his own dang party don't want him to run. So that's just not a really strong point to be going into a general against somebody who has a cult following like Trump does.
And even the things that he's accomplished, you can't put that between two pieces of bread and eat it. You know, people are still paying exorbitant fees at the grocery store. He hasn't done much about that. And with this particular poll, I don't buy it. I think it is an outlier, but I do buy the idea that they're about neck and neck. What I wonder is, like, with all these indictments against Trump, they are helping him during the primaries. And that, I think those indictments are the main reason he's going to win the primaries. I used to think that when they got to the general, that it would hurt him. But I'm not seeing that. I mean, there's over 90 charges against Trump, and he's running neck and neck with Biden right now. Mm-hmm. That should not be happening, especially with Biden being the incumbent. So at this point, I don't know what's going to happen. And Amani, you make a good case for why Trump could possibly win. But I mean, unless he goes to jail, but maybe even then, we live in crazy times. If he faces jail time, that might even help him more.
Yeah. Well, it's super weird, right? Like, it's understandable that the Trump supporters are thriving on the indictments, right? Because it reinforces the narrative that he's being persecuted. The deep state's out to get him. This is all political. And for people who view it that way, the more indictments, the more they love him, because it's more confirmation of that narrative. And I'm with you, Jeff. I'm not sure how the middle of the road voter, the person who might theoretically be swayed one way or the other, is reacting to that stuff, because I think they have the war in their own head of, well, he resisted the peaceful transfer of power. They got a point there. You know, there's his behavior and his commentary and all of that. And there's the indictments. And that worries me for a variety of reasons. And again, I do remember the gas was cheaper. And I do remember he did great in the economy. And I do remember that I could afford chicken back then, and bacon, both chicken and bacon. I didn't have to only buy chicken. You know, I could really pay for both of them. And, you know, that seemed to work okay. And so I can see where you're concerned about. I'm not sure which way they react to this stuff come a year from now, November. But go ahead.
I was going to say, there was that other survey, and I know you hate surveys, Andrew, but I know there was that survey.
I'm glad we honored that comment, by the way. Thank you.
No, there was that survey that showed that, I believe it was 44% of Americans say that their lives were easier before Biden took office than it was after. Now, that's not the majority, but that's a huge chunk of people. I mean, if those people are normally Democrats, I can see them staying home or maybe even holding their nose and going with Trump, even though they hate his guts. If their lives were better when he was in office, they might be willing to deal with the drama.
So let me ask you guys something. Who do people like?
Nobody.
Congress? Do you think people like what they're doing in Congress right now?
No, that was
Trump's numbers are lower than Biden's. Biden's is pretty darn low. Who do people? I mean, I think the danger here, I mean, you can look at any one of these people, and everybody agrees we hate them, right? I mean, we hate them all. Every one of them we hate. But when you start comparing them with each other, you kind of, you remember in school they had the thing where they would curve the grade, you know, what's the curve?
Right.
Curve is like zero now, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a harder comparison, I think.
Yeah. You guys think there's a, I've not had this thought before, so I could be just off my rocker, but when you were talking about people looking up at the picture of Obama and thinking we're getting a third Obama term here, and, you know, that kind of nostalgia for that era and all the things that he represented to a whole group of people, do you think maybe the, and certainly Biden campaigned on that. I mean, he clearly, you know, there was all kinds of that infusing his campaign.
100%.
Did that maybe work against him now, because there's nobody looking at Joe Biden and thinking, ah, oh, the sweet era of Obama is back? There's nobody who thinks that, right? So that's the raised expectations that it would be the third and fourth term, and that got dashed on the rocks, and they're seeing what Biden really is, and he clearly can't even come close to living up to whatever they thought Obama was. Is that working against that disillusionment?
I think so. I think the thing is with Biden, he had an opportunity to have a clean slate, and he had a very low bar to clear, and he couldn't clear it. And that's why people are upset. If you can't pass voting rights in the year of 2000 anything, that I don't know what to tell you. Like, that's very basic stuff. If you can't get minimum wage pass, not even say you couldn't get the 15. He proposed the 15. It got voted down, and he simply never tried again and never spoke about it again. Like,
and you got both chambers of Congress too.
Literally, and had both chambers of Congress. It's like, did you even try? Like, there's this one quote from a comedy special where this dude was getting beat up, and they was like, dang, did you even pinch him? Like, did you even pinch him? Did you scream at him? Did you curse him at all? He didn't try hard enough. And I think that's where he messed up, because he came in, and of course, we had nothing to compare him to, right? We never saw him as a president, but he said, look, I'm going to be this. I'm the FDR. I'm about to bring in a new era of America. He got everybody excited and then didn't even do a fourth of that. And so now we're stuck with the reality of the disappointment that, yes, leaning on Obama created, but he created. He put forth his 2020 campaign promises, and they were great and they were exciting. And he's the one who couldn't deliver on hardly any of them. So that's something he did to himself.
Can we do crazy theory time for a second? Just because it's been bugging me and this whole conversation about who's your alternative, right? You got Gavin Newsom is going to do this debate on Hannity with Ron DeSantis. And, you know, clearly that's an act of probably desperation by Ron DeSantis, sure. You know. All right. OK. And Gavin Newsom, who I didn't watch the interview, but I got told that he really cleaned Hannity's clock in the interview that he did not that long ago. And so, you know, he's clearly going to be it's going to be good. OK, it's going to be interesting. This crazy wingnut theory that I've heard out there that, OK, Feinstein's seat, she says she's going to fill it out, but, you know, we'll see. So Feinstein leaves. Kamala gets put in the California Senate by Gavin Newsom, who in trade gets made the vice president, who when Biden steps down. Crazy theory time, or is this insanity? No. Is there anything to this?
No,
they were trying to make him one of the party leaders. So it was supposed to be Stacey Abrams, but they've completely abandoned that whole thing. So I think after that, they kind of scrambled when she didn't win governor, because at the DNC convention, I think it was like maybe 2 years ago now, they like had her as like the whole keynote speaker. So it was supposed to be Stacey. It's not anymore. So I think they're scrambling, and Gavin is somebody. And I'm not sure if the rumors are coming from Gavin's camp, because I know he wants to be president so bad. Like, who is starting these rumors? Is this really?
That's conspiracies come from me. Self-originated.
It comes from his hair gel.
That's it.
So, Andrew, there is zero chance. Let me put your mind at ease on this. There is zero chance that Vice President Harris will quit her vice presidency to become a senator from California. She did not go this. She's a very ambitious woman. She did not go this far to step away from it, I do agree with
you. Might not be her choice.
That Gavin Newsom, well, she could decide whether to resign or not, I guess. Gavin Newsom is, I mean, he's a man on the rise. And you're right, it's not going to be Stacey. Losing hurts your chances when you don't win the governor's race. It takes you off of the fast track. And he has, I was not a huge fan of his, but I do think he's among the top two or three, you know, Dems of the next generation. You'll notice how loyal he's being to Biden now. right? Anytime anybody asks about it, absolutely not. I'm not campaigning for Biden. I mm-hmm. love Biden. Biden's going to be the new guy. And I think that's just strategic, that if something happens to Biden and he goes away, Gavin Newsom is going to be in a very strong position to step up. But I don't think he's going to stick a knife in Joe Biden's back.
So he might take the Veep slot, but that'd be under Kamala as opposed to instead of.
Yeah. Or if something happens to Biden, I mean, listen, if Biden goes away, I do not think that people will say, well, hey, she's the vice president, she gets it automatically. They'd be one hell of a fight for her, and there'd be a lot of people running for that.
That'd be a very thick primary. That would be a crazy primary to witness. I would be giddy to watch that.
Yeah, I don't think Kamala would win. I mean, they'd be crazy to nominate her.
Yeah, she didn't do a good job. And again, this is a whole nother thing. I'm not sure whose fault it was, but she got elected and did nothing as well. It was just a complete miscalculation.
Oh, the border, what do you mean? She solved the border. She gave the border. She solved the border.
Hey, hey, stop. Failure with that too. Like, come on,
Andrew, stop being sexist and racist, Andrew. Not
They set her up for failure when they said, Kamala, your duties as VP is immigration. Fix it.
Like, solve that.
How is she going to do that? So, yeah, it's lose-lose. But yeah, we'll see what happens in this election. I don't even know what a Trump 2024 presidency looks like. I can't even imagine what them 4 years are going to be. But buckle up, y'all. Get your popcorn ready. Get prepared. Build your World War III bunkers, because we're going for a ride.